The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
It's September, and you know what that means. September call-ups for all the other teams except for the Diamondbacks. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Cody Fincher as well on the Ain't No Fang Podcast. Thanks for checking us out this week. Yeah, so September brings two extra roster spots for every team, and typically what that means is you get some prospects that are called up, and you get your first look at them. Unless you're the Diamondbacks, in which case you get Luke Weaver and Stuart Fairchild, who is kind of still a prospect. Not a big-name one, but still kind of a prospect. And Luke Weaver, to his credit, he's been injured.
Yeah.
So he's returning from a long injury stint.
Hasn't pitched since May until yesterday.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But he's back and doing quite well, actually.
Do you remember how the September call-ups used to be? I didn't even know the number until yesterday. They used to expand the rosters to 40 people.
Yeah.
They used to basically almost slightly less than double it.
But the problem with that was, if you went and did that, you're expanding by 15 roster spots, which is more than half of your team already. The problem with that is, if you did do that, is now you're completely depleted in the minor leagues, which doesn't really matter because their season's over anyway.
It sucks for the minor league teams that are going to make the minor league playoffs, because they usually take their best players away during the playoffs.
But then in the majors, too, nobody plays.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know.
Like, they're going to play, what, once a week?
It's like, yeah, basically. And you want to see this top prospect. Okay, he might get a pinch hit at bat here and there, or a start here and there. But I kind of miss that, instead of just, okay, here's two guys. Like,
yeah, I get that.
It was very drastic, I guess.
I'd like to see the numbers on how many players teams used to actually call up. Even like, you could call up 15, but nobody did.
I bet they wouldn't. Like, all, yeah, they probably wouldn't be like, well, we have 15 guys in mind that are going to come up. Probably
not. If you had 3, 4, five guys that you really, like, two arms and maybe three players.
Two arms, two legs.
Or the a nose, preferably. No, I mean, I think the way that it is now, where the roster is at 26 during the season and then it expands to 28, I think that's pretty good. I don't know what I expected the Diamondbacks to do with September call-ups.
I don't either. Like, of course I wanted Seth Beer. But
we want beer.
We want beer. Now. When do we want it? Now.
Now.
We
did not get Seth Beer, though.
No, we did not.
He's still crushing in AAA,
though. He is destroying AAA. You know who also is destroying everything in AAA? Is Alec Thomas, by the way.
Who just got moved up to AAA.
Yes, he is killing it. And he's only, what, 20 years old? So he might be on the fast track here. But yeah, yesterday we got Luke Weaver off the injured list, which is fine. You need to see what Luke Weaver has. I've been saying this for 2 years. You need to see what Luke Weaver has, because, I'll go blue in the face saying this. You traded Paul Goldschmidt for Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver and Andrew Young, but you mostly want to see Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly. Carson Kelly has proven to me that he's a serviceable catcher. He could probably do more offensively for my liking, but he's had a couple injuries this year. He was hit in the hand by a Walker Buehler fastball that hurts a lot, and then he was hit on the foot, I believe. I don't remember if it was a foul ball from his own bat or someone fouled the ball off his foot while he was catching. I can't remember, but I think he broke his foot, so, and he's back playing. But yeah, you need to see Luke Weaver. And yesterday he was really good. He went 6 innings. I think he only gave up 4 hits, 1 earned run. It was just a solo home run in the 6th inning by Trent Grisham against the Padres, and he struck out 3.
No walks either.
And part of that was, they highlighted this on the TV broadcast, he kind of simplified his windup a bit. He used to kind of like come to the side and kind of glide his left foot and then come back. And he's moved on the rubber. He is not sliding his foot as much. He's keeping his hands more simplified. So maybe they found something in his delivery that was causing him to be inaccurate with his pitches. So hopefully that's something that gets fixed. And but yeah, And I want to see Luke Weaver. There was talks of him coming back in the bullpen. And I'm like, no. If he's going to be a starter, start him. Don't bring him back in the bullpen, because who else is in this rotation?
Yeah, who's blocking him?
Who's Tyler Gilbert? I mean, he's a nice story. Tyler Gilbert, I like how competitive he is. He doesn't throw very hard, but he throws strikes, and he's not afraid of contact. That no-hitter he threw against the Padres, there was a lot of balls hit and play that night. The last ball was a screaming line drive to center field that was pretty much right at Ketel Marte. But I like how competitive he is. I don't know how he will be in the future as a starter. Who knows? But the only other guys in the rotation are Gallen and Bumgarner, who are mainstays. And when Merrill Kelly comes back from the COVID list, I guess. And so I wanted to see Luke Weaver in the rotation. I'm glad that they put him back in the starting rotation, because I did not want to see him come back out of the bullpen.
Yeah, and you brought this to my attention during the game, during the broadcast. Mike Farron mentioned that Luke Weaver had been doing really well when he got injured back in May. I went and looked at the numbers. He's only got 9 starts this season, so it's not a huge sample size. Well, I mean, the 2 starts he had, before, the one in which he got injured and the one before that,
yeah,
it's a combination of about roughly 10 innings, no earned runs. So, I mean, that is a really good stretch.
He might have been starting to put it together before he hurt his shoulder.
Right. And now he continues that here months later.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it always seems to me like every time Luke Weaver does something incredible, it seems like we're talking about it in context of where you been, because he's coming back from injury.
Yeah.
And so I'm concerned for his health level. I'm happy he's back now. Looks like he's in good form.
Yeah.
I'm with you. If you're going to use him as a starter down the road, you got to see what he's got. And we know he's capable of big games like this. He threw a game back in April that was 7 innings, 1 hit. He carried a no-hitter into the 6th or 7th inning, whatever. And we know he's capable of these games. He's just not consistent with them.
He's got good stuff, too. He throws mid-90s. He's got a good curveball, a cutter. And, I mean, I want Luke Weaver to succeed. I do. Because I'm still not over Paul Goldschmidt not playing here anymore. I don't think I ever will be. I love Paul Goldschmidt. But I want Luke Weaver to be good, just simply for the fact that that trade wasn't a failure. Not saying that if Carson Kelly is the only one that turns out to be good from that trade, it's a failure, but it would be disappointing because at the time, Luke Weaver was the prize return in that trade. Carson Kelly, the D-backs needed a catcher for the future because of the time. What year was that? 2018, 2019?
It was after the 17.
So 2018 or 2019, they didn't really have that guy. They had Jeff Mathis and Alex Avila and Chris Iannetta and Chris Herman were their catchers. So there wasn't really that guy that would be your mainstay catcher. And they got that, I think, with Carson Kelly, at least for now. But, I mean, it would be really disappointing if Luke Weaver doesn't figure it out and doesn't last here.
Yeah, and I look back on that trade, and I do think that the Cardinals did win that trade. Unless Weaver or Kelly becomes an all-star at some point, St. Louis was always going to win that trade. But I will say this, Goldie is not the Goldie of old in St. Louis right now, and he's getting paid a lot more in St. Louis. So, unfortunately, I think it's just timing. Like, could I have seen Goldie doing what he's doing right now in St. Louis? Would I have rather seen him do it in Arizona? Absolutely.
You know,
but the problem is, he was really, really good at the time they traded him.
Yeah, and he's actually having a pretty good year right now. He's
heated up recently.
He's batting .287 with 24 homers, 82 RBIs. His OPS is .848.
Yeah.
Hit 2 home runs yesterday. They're fighting for a wild card spot in St. Louis, and he started off slow. And remember the year after they traded him, we were like, oh, Christian Walker is just as good as Paul Goldschmidt, because their numbers were pretty similar. That's obviously not the case anymore. Christian Walker, he's had a rough, like most of the D-backs this year, he's had a rough season.
There's going to have to be a decision made there too, by the way, because I think Pavin Smith has always been best suited for first base. They know that too. They've had to play him in the outfield because A, they're running out of outfielders and don't seem to believe in acquiring them.
Yeah.
And B, because it was his natural position, was first base. And I think he's an above average first baseman in the future. I think he's a below average right fielder. He's especially below average center fielder.
Yeah.
And then, like you mentioned, Seth Beer, if he's going to continue to rake at AAA, he's going to get called up eventually. Maybe it's next season. And defensively, I don't think he fits anywhere other than first base, and I don't even think he's going to be that great at first.
I feel like the feeling around the organization is if they can get him to be a decent first baseman, that they will have something there. You know, like, you don't
sure.
have at first base. I mean, we've been spoiled with Paul Goldschmidt for a while, and even Christian Walker at times. He's had a rough go of it this year at first base, but I mean, he was a Gold Glove finalist a couple years ago, and I think it was that first year after Goldschmidt got traded. But I feel like at first base, you just, I mean, I'll go back to Moneyball. The A's taught Scott Hatterberg how to play first base just to get his bat in the lineup. So
you don't have to have an arm.
You don't
at all.
You just need to. You need to be able to pick an occasional short hop ball. You need to be able to do that because all the throws aren't going to be perfect all the time. You need to know which balls to go for when they're to your right and going towards second. If you can get there, great. But you need to know where your second baseman is. You need to know where the bag's at all times. And on occasion, we saw Goldschmidt have to do this a lot with Jake Lamb throwing from third to first, come off the bag and make a tag. But
I'd say this too.
Saying it's easy to play first base.
No,
but
in the future, if you could move Ketel Marte back to second base, I think that provides a little more range at the position, and you might be able to minimize the amount of ground that somebody like a Seth Beer would have to cover.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm not, like I've said before, I'm not opposed to Pavin Smith being an outfielder, but I don't think he should be playing center field.
No.
I'm okay with him in right field. He's been serviceable out there, and he's starting to be more aggressive when tracking down balls and throwing back in to try to nail guys trying to advance to another base. You know,
he's still a rookie, by the way.
Oh yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of time to develop.
And honestly, I don't hate Dalton Varsho in the outfield either. He's got a good arm. He's fast. He has decent instincts out there from what I've seen. So that's another question. Do they want Dalton Varsho to really focus on being a catcher, or because his bat's heated up since the All-Star break too? So I mean, they have a lot of question marks with their young guys. And where does Josh Rojas play? Josh Rojas needs to play every day, in my opinion, unless you really upgrade a lot of spots this offseason in free agency and trades. Josh Rojas needs to be an everyday player for this team, and he has been, but that's just mostly because of injuries.
And he plays all over.
He does.
I can see him being the second baseman of the future.
I can see him playing shortstop too. But then you have your crush Geraldo Perdomo waiting in the wings.
I do love Geraldo.
Yeah.
I love you. Sorry. I lost track of everything.
Did you just black out?
Yeah,
Did you just black out?
Weird. No, I get what you're saying though.
And it's not like Perdomo is, you know, Corbin Carroll in single A. He's in triple A, and he's playing decently right now. And
he actually, after he got called up to the majors in April, he played a little bit when Nick Ahmed was out. And Josh Rojas played a lot of that shortstop at the time. Mm-hmm. Perdomo went down and struggled mightily. And I was reading, I think it was a Zach Buchanan piece, don't quote me on this, but about Perdomo having to go through, basically they remade his entire swing. He's always had a really good approach at the plate, but at one point in time, he was hitting in the 100s.
Yeah.
And his on-base percentage was still in the 300s, which I thought was really indicative of how good he is in terms of approach at the plate. But that wasn't what they worked on. They worked on his swing, and now all of a sudden, he's just crushing the baseball. So I don't know if that's a guy. I didn't think that we would see him get called up at the beginning of September, but it's a guy I would have liked to have seen, just because I'm really souring on Nick Ahmed, and it's nothing against the guy, but when you're known as a defensive wizard and that's the value you bring to the team and your bat is pretty much negligible for the most part through his time with the Diamondbacks, in a season where he's back to hitting basically below the Mendoza line, and also his defense has taken a real step back this year, it just starts to make me wonder, okay, when are we going to see Perdomo again? Because I do think that Perdomo is the shortstop of the future, except for the obvious Jordan Lawler, who was just picked in the first round, but Lawler's a couple of years away at the least.
Yeah, in August, Perdomo hit .306. So
he
still has a terrible overall batting average. He's still only overall hitting .196.
That's what I'm saying. He had an atrocious couple of months.
Yeah.
But then they worked on his swing, and all of a sudden he's on fire.
Yeah. Somehow in August he hit .306, even though all the games are not very good batting average. I'm looking at his game log. Anyway.
But that goes to show our disappointment with the call-ups.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of names we would have liked to have seen, but at the same time, I understand the organization not rushing to call up every young player they have. It's not like we were going to see
Alec Thomas
in September. He's not ready yet.
And there is the whole, you know, whether they want to admit it or not, the service time stuff.
It plays in.
And, yeah. I mean, Alec Thomas is 20 years old. He was playing in single A this year.
Yeah.
So they probably don't want to bring him up. And, I mean, and then there's the whole, you know, you'd have to clear a 40-man roster spot. And, I mean, I'm looking at this team. I don't know who you would keep. You could easily, I don't want to be mean, but you can easily DFA anyone in the bullpen, and you're probably not going to miss them very much, besides the fact that you need relief pitchers, no matter how bad they are.
True.
But, I mean, look, just going back to what you're talking about, Nick Ahmed. Nick Ahmed is not a free agent until 2024.
Yeah, they signed him to an extension.
That signing was weird to me. I was okay with them bringing him back, but I'm like, a four-year contract? And then especially when I realized, I mean, it's just so like, I'm just weighing the options and I'm arguing with myself because I realized this year, the free agent class of shortstops is ridiculous. But then I'm on the other side. They're not going to spend that much money for Carlos Correa or Trevor Story or even Javi Baez at this point. But I just look at that contract and I'm like, oh my goodness, the dude. Yeah, he's a good defender. He's still really good. He's not platinum glover Nick Ahmed anymore, though. He's not. And it just comes with age and, you know, wear and tear and all that. But and then his bat just has never been there. It's never been there. And it's disappointing because I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a season where I'm like, if Nick Ahmed could just hit 250 this year. That's sad. That's a disappointing expectation. If he could just be mediocre at the plate.
Especially when you have guys like, you know, David Peralta is kind of the exception to the rule. But like going into a season, you're usually like, if David Peralta could just hit 290 again, you know, that'd be phenomenal. Yeah. And to his credit, he's had his moments. But yeah, Nick Ahmed, I don't know. I don't want to make it sound like he's a terrible player. He's not. I mean, there's a reason they signed him long term.
He's hitting 222 this year.
That's the thing.
Four homers, 35 RBIs. He's only getting on base percentage is only 282. He doesn't get on base.
They signed him long term for his defense.
Yes, they did.
Because if they signed him long term for his offense, I don't understand that decision.
And the money's not horrible. He's making like
$10
million the next 2 years, which is not horrible.
No, it's not going to prevent them from doing anything
shortstop.
They need to do.
Yeah, but...
But he's not the future at the position, I don't think.
Not when this team is where it is. I think at the time they thought they were going to be a competitive team, which they should expect to be competitive every year. Every team should.
A year and a half ago, we all thought they were going to be a competitive
team.
Sure. They went out and got Starling Marte.
In 2020, before COVID happened... They were being pegged as a playoff team by a lot of people, including myself. I thought, okay, they got Madison Bumgarner, Starling Marte,
Cole Calhoun.
Cole Calhoun is a good player when he's healthy. He's a really good defender in right field. He hits home runs. He was a leading home run hitter, I think, in 2020 in those 60 games. They what else did they do? they did some good things. That were like, okay, Starling Marte was like the one. I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. And there was still like that whole what we always talk about. There wasn't that one guy in the lineup where you were like, oh my gosh, there was no Fernando Tatis Jr. or Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani or, you know, Aaron Judge in that lineup. But it was a lineup of good hitters that were going to be a pain in the butt to face, and it just didn't work for whatever reason.
By the way, just so we can get this out there,
what?
We always talk about Diamondbacks who leave and go on to be even better in other places.
Starling Marte.
Starling Marte stole 19 bases in August.
In 1 month?
What was that stat I sent you yesterday? I think it was that Starling Marte is the first player.
I'll try to find it.
I think it's like he's the first player to steal 20 bags in each in both leagues in the same season.
Here, I found it. Starling Marte is the first player in MLB history to steal at least 20 bases in two different leagues during the same season.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And he's not even regarded as like a top speedster.
No.
I mean, he might be now, but
like, is MLB the Show speed is going to go up, or is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is like when he was acquired, we all knew he could steal a base, but I think it was more about his base running ability than it was about his flat out foot speed.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that, I mean, this past month, I couldn't help but think to myself, Oh, that would be nice. That would be a nice player.
Well, the D-backs could use somebody like him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. And we got Caleb Smith for him.
He literally, Starling Marte, the acquisition last year, literally was perfect for me because it took Ketel Marte out of center field and put him back at second base. And you had yourself a really good defensive center fielder who can hit. Who can freaking hit. I'm going to look up his stats right now.
Yeah, please do. Because I just want to feel really terrible.
In the last month, he's hitting .353, three homers, 16 RBIs, 16 stolen bases in the last month.
Yeah, you're not going to get like a ton of power from the guy.
No, he was never a... I mean, he had that one year where he hit a lot of home runs and then he got popped for PEDs, but he's never... Outside of that, he's not a home run hitter.
Right.
He's an average... He gets on base and then he steals the base. And then he scores.
Yeah. Which, I mean, there's huge
He's always been a really good fielder, too.
The Diamondbacks don't exactly have anybody stealing bases.
Not since Tim LaCastro left. And
not with regularity.
Even... That always baffled me. Like, Tim LaCastro, I'm not saying he should have played every day, but, man, was his speed underutilized here?
I'll say it. He should have played every day, not started every day.
He should have been on the field at some point every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, the dude is one of the fastest guys in the league. And I feel like he was just... There were days where he just sat there. I'm like, what... I mean... At least pinch run or something when you're in a close game. I don't know.
I don't disagree with you.
I don't know.
Other things Diamondback specific related. Coming up this weekend, the 20th anniversary of the 2001 championship that they won against the New York Yankees just after 9/11 back in the day. You're planning on attending the game.
I am.
It's Saturday. What should we expect? To see, I feel like we go through this almost every year when they, you know, they celebrate the World Series team.
Yeah.
We usually see, they bring back alumni.
They don't much celebrate it every year anymore.
Yeah.
Now they're kind of going with the big milestones. So I think the last time they really had one of these was
15?
5 years ago.
Yeah, the 15th anniversary.
Yeah. And that was, I think I was at that game too. I show up when the purple and teal show up.
You're in it for the jersey.
I don't have a throwback jersey. I'm trying to hunt one down. It's hard. It's hard
we'll
to find them. I'm going to get one.
We'll get you
I'm going to try to get one before
somehow.
The game.
Okay.
I have a purple hat.
So I anticipate Bob Brenly will be a big part of
it. Well, just think about it this way. Their best players from that team are a part of the front office. Randy Johnson and Luis Gonzalez. And then Bob Brenly's obviously around because he works in the TV booth.
Yeah,
and
Mark Grace.
Yeah, Mark Grace is
TV.
On pre and post game, and I'm Jay Bell always finds his way back, like he always does, and you know he's gonna probably show up. I would love it if Tony Womack showed up because I love Tony Womack.
That's
he was
a good
one
name.
Of my favorite players.
Junior
that
Spivey.
Team. Ooh,
what's he up to?
I don't know.
Bring him back.
Craig Counsell is obviously the manager of one of the best teams in baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers, so he's a little busy. He always finds time, though, to sit down and record a video, which is nice. Where's Damian Miller? He was a huge part of that team, man. To try and catch Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson and manage those personalities, holy crap.
That lineup was Damian Miller at catcher.
Where's Reggie Sanders? What's he doing?
Mark Grace at first, Jay Bell at second. Matt Williams at third.
Is Matt Williams still coaching in Japan?
I think that's where he was.
Oh, I think it was the KBO.
The KBO.
I think
yeah.
it was the KBO.
I don't know.
I wonder if he'll be there.
Tony Womack was the shortstop. Gonzo in left. Steve Finley in center.
Oh,
he was
I
a good
Steve
player.
Steve Finley, dude.
Reggie Sanders, you mentioned in right.
Danny Bautista.
Craig Counsell was on the bench. David DeLucci.
Ooh. Dude,
Craig Counsell had almost 540 plate appearances.
Everybody,
though, so he's a
starter. David DeLucci was so underrated here. He was the perfect bench guy, and everyone loved him.
He had 10 home runs and about 240 plate appearances, so that's pretty significant.
Rod Barajas was just here. He apparently is the bullpen coach for the Padres.
Oh,
was,
I didn't know
he
that.
Was just in, I heard his name on the broadcast. I'm like, oh my gosh, Rod Barajas,
Danny Bautista. Outfielder, Eruviel Durazo was on the team. Spivey, we mentioned.
Yes.
Barajas. Greg Colburn. I have an autograph from him.
Do you?
Yeah, I think he was a minor leaguer on the Rangers when I was a kid, and I went to spring training, and I got, and the first baseman, you know, when they walk off the field, they throw a ball into the stands, and they threw, I had no idea who he was, but I got a baseball from him. Cool. And when you're a kid, you're like, oh, that's awesome.
That's a major league baseball player.
I was probably like 10.
Yeah. Can I tell you an autograph, a weird autograph story? I got Luis Gonzalez's autograph. This is kind of before he was kind of welcomed back into the, not that he left horribly, but when he, they brought him back into the organization, this is before that. My friend and I went, and he was doing a autograph signing at a Chick-fil-A in all places. And we stood in line at a Chick-fil-A, not for the food, but to get his autograph.
For Gonzo,
it was so weird. It was so strange, but I got it.
Was he still in the league?
I don't think so.
Because he went to the Dodgers and a couple other places.
Yeah, it went to the Marlins, I think, or back to the Marlins? No, he came from the Tigers when he was...
That could be it, yeah.
I think he went to the Marlins and he played for the Dodgers or something. He might have played for the Rockies too. I can't remember.
I guess I could just click on his name.
Steve Finley, I think, played for every team in the NL West, which is
Gonzo did come from Detroit, although he wasn't there long. 1 year in Detroit in 98.
Yeah.
Houston before that. Chicago Houston. Cubs before that. Houston again before that. But yeah, he did go to the Dodgers and then the Marlins.
I knew it.
After his Arizona days. No, I mean, it's an interesting team. We're going to see a lot of those guys are going to be here this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about all of them, but a lot of them.
You're probably not going to see all of them. That's for sure.
No.
I mean,
well, you mentioned Council.
Council's busy. he's busy winning a
in
bunch
a
of baseball games for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Barajas, same thing.
Yeah, he's busy. Jay Bell's not busy, I don't think. I mean, I don't
you
think.
You don't know.
Well, he used to be a minor league coach in the D-backs organization for a while. I don't know what he's doing now. Maybe he's retired. Yeah.
It's going to be cool. Greg Schulte is still the voice of the Diamondbacks, has been since day one. So
that's true.
There's going to be some good memories there.
Too.
It'll be fun.
It's always the best when, I mean, I do like their uniforms now. I'll say that. I didn't care for the first change to the just white and red and black. That font on the jerseys was always weird to me. And I didn't care for the next change with the diamonds on them.
The gradient?
Yeah, the snakeskin looking gradient on them.
That was weird.
And the really dark gray road jerseys. Didn't care for those. I really like their jerseys now. They simplified them and they look really slick, I think. But I mean, to me, I was 9 years old and that team won the World Series. I will always be partial to the purple pinstripe vest jerseys purple sleeves. Heck yeah. Those are the best jerseys that this team's ever worn.
Also,
I love them.
Also out this week, we did get renderings, basically pictures of what the sports book will look like, the Caesars sports book, which I believe is going to be out at the Game 7 Grill location, kind of outside the gates. I believe that's what's happening. Yeah, actually, it says right here that the space is currently a Game 7 Grill. So that hasn't been in use. It's going to be a sports book. The pictures look kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now.
I do worry because it is right on, like, it's in the area where the gates are.
The plaza area.
I do kind of worry that it's going to back up to that. I mean, not that the Diamondbacks have, like, a ton of attendance right now. No offense to the Diamondbacks.
It kind of looks like... Go ahead.
Attendance is going to come back.
Sure.
And it looks like it's going to be a great way to merge the two, the stadium and the sports book. I just don't know. It's going to be hectic for that hour before games.
It definitely looks like they're trying to make it a little more classy with the renderings.
It's upscale.
Yeah, it's like it's not a bar anymore.
No, you know,
it's not a sports bar anymore.
It's a casino quality sports
book. Yeah, but there's going to be food and drinks and stuff like that, obviously. It looks pretty cool. I'll say that. I'm not a huge betting man myself. I mean, I play fantasy football and fantasy baseball every year, I guess, if you want to call that gambling.
Yeah.
But, like, that's all I've never placed a bet on
a game
or a
season
or anything like that. No, I've never have. But this looks pretty cool, and I know a lot of people I know are into that stuff, and we'll probably find Derek there a lot.
Somebody asked me, do you think that it will raise attendance? First and foremost, the thing that raises attendance is winning games.
Yeah.
But I would say...
That's the truth.
I would say...
It's not going to hurt.
No, it won't. I think people will go just to go to the sports book, but not necessarily go to the game. You know what I mean? Like, instead of paying $30 for a ticket to go to the game and also go to the sports book, I think you would just go to the sports book eat, drink, bet, whatever while you're there.
Sure.
I think that's its own thing. But I could see people doing both.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Why not?
Or going to a sports book after the game. I could see that. So we'll see how it turns out.
Place the bet after the game's over.
Nationally, the Mets, in case you've been living under a rock, the Mets have done pretty much everything wrong this season.
I always think that I have it bad.
And then you look at the Mets.
And then I like, man, it must really suck to be a Mets fan.
I don't know where to start here, but I'll just kind of run down the order in what I think is chronological order. Remember, the Diamondbacks' former employee, Jared Porter, was the new GM.
Yeah, and they were doing well.
Yeah.
They were doing well.
And then he got canned pretty quickly due to some sexual
harassment
misconduct.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So that wasn't great. Then they signed Lindor to a huge contract.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it like $1 million more than Fernando Tatis, or was it the other way around? I can't remember
what
who signed first.
Let me look.
It's like $331 million or something like that. And so Lindor gets this huge contract and now has had a well below average season.
He's been terrible. He was injured for a while. He signed a 10-year, $341 million contract.
$341. Jeez. Then Jacob DeGrom was having a legendarily amazing season.
He's so good.
And has been injured.
Ugh, like, he's been on the injured list, I think, like three different times this year.
So
it sucked.
On top of all that, last week, there's two issues with the Mets this week. let me start with the...
This time on issues with the Mets.
Let me start with the, I think, the one that we can talk about less, which is their interim GM, who's been filling in since Jared Porter left, is Zach Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Scott was popped with a DUI this week after he left a team event, like a fundraiser, at the owner's house.
Yeah.
On Sunday night, supposedly the event ended at 9 p.m. He gets popped
Not for Zach Scott, it didn't.
Oh, man. He got popped for DUI at like 4 or 5 in the morning. So,
yeah, not good.
Not a good situation there. I don't know what the absolute latest is with Scott. But
I'm looking at a tweet from Jeff Passan from ESPN, is that the Mets have placed him on administrative leave, obviously.
Yeah.
And he pleaded not guilty to driving under the influence this morning. This was a tweet from 2 hours ago. And that team president Sandy Alderson will take over Scott's duties.
Listen, I don't know that DUI is a fireable offense. It can be. It's up to the organization. They've had a lot of turmoil in the last year, and we're going to get to the biggest one here that happened this week in a second. But I don't know. Steve Keim, the Cardinals GM, had a similar scenario, and he's still around. So
might be a little different because, I mean, Zach Scott was just the interim GM filling in for their other disgraced GM that they had to let go.
He was also a highly regarded front office guy. I mean, Zach Scott, if I remember right, he kind of cut his teeth with the Red Sox, much like all the other people.
There's speculation out there now that the Mets should go and hire Theo Epstein to save their team.
Well,
I saw Bob Nightingale tweet about that. I think he's just being, what is he now, as a consultant to the MLB league office?
Yeah, he is.
So he's not with any team right now.
No. If you're the Mets, you should absolutely want to do that. If you're Theo Epstein, though, you look at Sandy Alderson, who is now the president of baseball operations, who now is having to take over as the GM. Not that there's a lot to do in September, but especially when you're losing. But, they should want Theo, but does Theo want the Mets?
I don't know.
The reason Theo went... In Boston, he broke the curse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
Chicago,
won
he
several
broke
championships.
The curse again.
Yeah. And then Chicago, he took that on because it was another opportunity to do something amazing with an otherworldly franchise. I don't know that the Mets are that.
I don't know if they're otherworldly, but they're certainly a challenge. They do have a lot of good pieces there. I mean...
Great
they
market.
So the New York market, they have arguably the best pitcher in baseball in Jacob DeGrom when he's healthy. They have Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor. They're a good player. Michael Conforto, if they re-sign him this offseason. They have good pieces. And if Noah Syndergaard ever comes back, he's had his own problems in his own right. But
I don't disagree with you.
I think, but then again, if you're Theo Epstein, do you just like, this is another challenge for me? I'm going to come out of retirement and, you know,
try to win
another title.
Theo also, I think, has solidified himself as one of the greatest front office members, GMs, whatever you want to call them, in baseball history.
Yeah.
I mean, in the modern era, I certainly put him up there with like Dave Dombrowski, who was recently, I say recently, in the last couple of years, hired to run Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of guys who have won multiple championships in multiple organizations. Like, that's otherworldly talented front office guys
right.
to me. So, yeah, if you're the Mets, you should want Theo Epstein.
You should.
Of course.
You should talk to him. And
Theo Epstein went through this process to get Jared Porter and Zach Scott.
Yeah, they... The Mets, first of all, they need to revamp whatever system they use to scout these guys out that they hire.
To vet people.
Yeah, they need to revamp that system, whatever it is, because it is not working.
100%.
But... I mean, if you're Theo Epstein, I mean, what could hurt? You could listen. You could listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
But does that mean the Mets get rid of Sandy Alderson, or do they make him the GM and Theo Epstein the president? I don't know. You know,
I'm not sure what happens there. Sandy's been there a long time.
And it hasn't worked.
So. No, I agree with you there.
I don't know.
I agree with you. I don't know how that works out. The biggest and possibly stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Stupid stuff, man.
Is this
oh my
week,
gosh.
We heard that the Mets have been playing horribly. Let's just put that out there first.
Yeah.
And
losing you know their
games.
Fans. You know their
yeah,
fans.
Yeah, they're Mets fans. And Javi Baez came up with an idea, and he and Francisco Lindor, good buddies, they've been doing this new thing where they're tired of the fans booing them when they're unsuccessful. So in retaliation, the players started booing the fans and giving them a thumbs down every time they do something good. What?
It's just so soft. It's soft. And I'm not sure exactly who started it, but...
Javi said he came up with the
idea. Okay, so he's coming from... And this is no insult to Cubs fans. Cubs fans are passionate and they love that team, but it's mostly love. And I've never seen anything like a Cubs game in the middle of July when the team is horrible in a day game that is sold out. And that's what you get at Wrigley Field. That's what you get. And just the fact that it's just crazy because Javi Baez is used to just Cubs fans adore him. He was part of the 2016 World Series team. He played really well that won the first World Series in over 100 years for the Chicago Cubs. He will be a legend there forever. And then he comes to New York, and the New York fans are not known for tolerating horrible play for a long time. And they'll boo you right off the field. I went to a Yankees game. And not saying Mets and Yankees fans are the same, but the Yankees game I went to, every time Giancarlo Stanton struck out, they booed him off the field. Every time. And no matter how good you are, if you strike out and or fail to come through in a big situation, you will hear boos.
New York, baby!
New York, we're going to do some damage! Anyway.
I love that.
It just seems so soft to me that... Guys like Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor, who came from Chicago and Cleveland, where, you know, I'm not sure about Cleveland sports, if they're that way, where they just don't, not that they don't care, but they're not as like, they won't turn on you as fast as New York fans will.
I think Cleveland is like the Cubs in that Cleveland loves all those players from the 90s that took them to championships.
Yeah.
They didn't win them, but took them to the World Series because that's all we have.
But it will be like Javi Baez and Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. They will be forever legends.
Well, to tie it back to the Mets, I think Cleveland probably feels the same way about Francisco Lindor that Cubs fans feel about Javi Baez.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's on a new team now, you still helped us get to the World Series in 2016.
Right.
Javi Baez obviously won that World Series with them. So,
good person. Good off the field guy, you know.
And we're not saying he's a bad dude for doing this.
It was just a dumb idea. It was just dumb. And it was never going to work out. And what was even more embarrassing is the team made them come out and apologize for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that probably wasn't sincere. Like,
well, first, I saw players, I think it was like Kevin Pillar, started putting out on Twitter, like, you guys are blowing this out of proportion. The media is just turning this into something. It's not a big deal. We're not even doing it. And then Javi Baez after the game is like, yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah.
It was my idea.
And he's like, and this is why we're doing it, because they should support us. Basically, he said they should just support them no matter what.
Yeah.
And That's what Cubs fans do.
Yeah.
They support, and it's fine. That's fine. There's no right or wrong answer for the fan standpoint here. There's a wrong answer for what the players are doing. You get paid millions of dollars to play baseball, and the fans are paying however many dollars it costs to go to a Mets game at Citi Field. And if you're playing horribly, they're going to let you know. Like, it's just, that's just a thing. That's what they're going to do.
I do feel like, too, Javi Baez is a beloved player in his time in Chicago. I think New Yorkers are a fan of him, except for after this incident. Javi is a free agent after this season.
Mm-hmm. There's talk he might go back to the Cubs.
So, well, and with that, he could go anywhere.
Sure.
It's not a done deal that he's still a Met, right?
No, not
You're going to have to, I don't know if this comes up in free agency or not, but you're going to have to be able to explain to your next fan base why you chose to do this in New York. And he hasn't been there long. He hasn't exactly been, you know, grown up in that organization. So maybe he just didn't know the fan base well enough.
And well, the bottom line is he's probably never been booed at home before. And I don't think he knew how to take it.
Maybe not.
I don't think he knew how to react, and he reacted, in my opinion, poorly to it.
Very poorly.
Very poorly.
And for Lindor to get on board with it,
yeah,
was
that
weird.
Was weird too. I know they're really close, like they're best friends or whatever. I don't know if they're best friends, but they're really close.
They're
friends.
Good friends.
Yeah. And it was just maybe support for them. Like, I don't know. Like, both of us are shortstops. We're both really good friends, and we're both struggling, and they're all booing us. Let's stick together, type of thing. I don't know, but
us against the world.
The gesture was just kind of just not good.
I was, from my perspective, I was like, just win games.
If you wanted to be sarcastic, even doing a thumbs whatever, stick your thumbs up to the fans, like, hey, look at, I'm doing good things.
Look what I did.
Instead of being like, nope, boo. Boo you. Remember when you booed me? Well, I'm booing you that I'm good now. Like, that's dumb.
It
like,
was very petty.
That's dumb.
It was very petty.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at the Diamondbacks schedule moving forward
the
in the month of September.
Schedule.
This is the final month of the season, by the way.
Oh, my goodness, it is.
Well, it's assuming you're not making the playoffs, so the Diamondbacks will not. If I'm reading this right, the Diamondbacks have today off. Is
they do.
Correct?
Oh,
all
that's
right,
great.
And then there's a three-game series against the Seattle Mariners. That's an interesting team that you don't get to play very often.
Yeah, and funny that they're playing the Seattle Mariners during the 20-year anniversary celebration, because that 2001 is the last time the Mariners made the playoffs.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that. Also interesting, you get a three-game series against Seattle here. Then you get a day off.
Yeah.
Then you get two games against the Rangers.
And then
here,
you go to Seattle.
And then you go to Seattle.
Yep.
So it's just going to be the AL West for the next week and a half.
Yep. It's a tough September for the Diamondbacks. Mariners for three, Rangers for two, at Mariners for three, at Dodgers for three, at Astros for three, home against the Braves for four, host the Dodgers for three, at San Francisco. That's September. And then they end the season in the first October 1st through the 3rd, hosting the Rockies.
Okay, that's not so bad. But
that's a tough September.
Those last 3 weeks in September. Oof. Dodgers, Astros, oof. Braves, Dodgers, Giants.
Oof.
There's not a good series there.
Nope.
At all.
Probably going to be a lot of L's.
Well, we've talked about, at this point in the season, you don't want to win too much. I'm trying to couch
no,
this.
No, here's the thing. And I know where you're going. I didn't want them to win either. Because the number one pick was right there.
Yeah.
The Baltimore Orioles are so bad, though, that the Diamondbacks could lose every game in September and they still probably wouldn't get the number one pick. So I am now more okay if they win a couple games here and there, because the Orioles are so terrible that they've lost at least 14 games in a row two times.
Yeah.
Twice this year. They were on a 20-game losing streak, and that's just otherworldly bad. So I know the Diamondbacks aren't going to, I guess the right word for it is catch the Orioles, catch up to the Orioles, catch down to the Orioles
yeah.
for the worst record in baseball. And like I've said before, the reason I won the number one pick is not because it's obviously in baseball, the number one pick in the draft is not a sure thing. It never has been. And it's so different because there's the minor leagues. You draft these guys out of high school. They're 17, 18 years old, and they might not be with your team for a while. But the only reason I wanted them to get the number one pick is you're going to be bad anyway this year. You're going to lose 100 games. you might as well be the worst so that you're the first in line at the buffet.
The problem is none of the players or coaches or front office members will intentionally try to lose games.
And that's fine. That's their jobs to win a game. Their job is to win a game. You could argue that the Astros, before they got Correa, Altuve, and Bregman, were tanking. They probably were.
And you would note, too, the Diamondbacks recently have gone to a complete youth movement. I mean, you've got Alice playing third base. Yeah, and they should. And I wanted to see those guys. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're playing the best players to win each game. Everybody we just talked about that they're going to play against in September is trying to win baseball
games.
Oh,
sure.
The Dodgers.
They are all in playoff races except for
the
Rangers.
The Astros, the Braves, the Dodgers again, the Giants. I mean,
even the Mariners.
Even the Mariners. All these teams are trying their absolute hardest to win games. They're not calling up the Jake McCarthys of the world to get a look at them.
They're calling
Drew Ellis.
They're calling guys up that are going to help their teams win.
Absolutely.
Not that the guys that, oh, I want to get a look at so-and-so.
They're the teams that are putting in waiver claims for the players that the Diamondbacks and other teams like them are putting on waivers. We kind of talked a little bit about Asdrubal Cabrera.
The Reds.
And how they put him on waivers. Yep. Nobody even noticed. And the Reds picked him up.
Yeah, that whole system was weird to me. I didn't even know you could do that anymore. I guess you could do it whenever you want. Putting a guy on waivers.
Yeah, you can
but
do that.
It was never announced we placed Asdrubal Cabrera on waivers. It was only announced when the Reds picked him up because he played. And like the Pirates, the D-backs were playing the Pirates, and the Pirates put Gregory Polanco on waivers, and he was playing while he was on waivers, and no one picked him up. It was so awkward.
That's
so
a thing
awkward.
That happens in baseball. I mean, especially with trade waivers after the trade deadline passes.
Those don't exist anymore.
Well, yeah.
They used to.
But that was the kind of thing that went under the radar.
That's how the Astros got Justin Verlander before they won the World Series in 2017.
Now, I mean, waivers, it doesn't really mean anything other than, hey, if somebody else wants to come get this guy.
You're basically giving that guy... I mean, if you just outright released him, it's the same thing. But you're giving that guy an opportunity. Like, Asdrubal Cabrera, he was a good teammate. He was a decent player here. They wanted to do right by him and give him a chance to go play on a playoff team. That's fine.
And now he does.
And now he's on the Reds, and he's getting a chance to possibly play in the wild card game this year.
But that's what I'm talking about, is these teams are going to play in September. They're the teams that are that. They're trying to go find those guys, the last piece.
All of these teams were huge buyers at the trade deadline this year, and they're going to be trying their hardest to beat you.
Well, enjoy the 20th anniversary game this weekend.
I will.
Against the Mariners. That is interesting. Do you think Ichiro will be there?
Why?
Is he a part of the organization still? I feel like he is.
I think so. That would be cool.
He hasn't suited up.
He should
recently,
probably play for them.
I'd watch that.
There was that weird stretch.
I think he'd be okay.
There was that weird stretch where like Ichiro was like still playing for them, but not really a part of their it was really strange.
Yeah,
like,
he went to the front office, but then he did end up playing a little bit.
Yeah.
And they were like,
I think they started they started the season in Japan that year.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was going to retire, and they wanted him to play in Japan in
That's
front of
what
his
it was,
home country.
Yeah, you're not going to see
And then I think he
weekend.
Retired after the game.
Who knows?
In Japan.
He could just be walking around the arena.
That'd
know,
be cool, man.
The stadium.
That'd be so cool.
Well, enjoy the game. I'm sure that I'm sure all your best friends from back in 2001 will be there, like Jay Bell.
I love Jay Bell.
Earlier, you said Jay Bell doesn't do anything. I wonder if Jay Bell, if he heard that, how he would feel about that.
Not that he doesn't do anything. He's just not as busy as Craig Counsell is.
He's just not busy because he doesn't do anything. We thank you so much for checking out the podcast this week.
I hope Tony Womack is there.
That'd be a good one.
I love Tony Womack.
I hope Junior Spivey is there. We'll keep an eye on that. And the 20th anniversary game and the upcoming schedule, as tight as it is in September, we're keeping an eye on that. Thanks so much for checking out the podcast this week. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Cody Fincher as well. It is the Ain't No Fang podcast here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.